Well, it's that time on a Thursday. Get our view from the north. Opening the 5 o'clock hour. He's keeping pretty busy. Doing his thing for NBC Sports Northwest. Now the Dwight and Aaron show on Rip City Radio. He's podcasting. He's talking Ducks. Sleep is optional. Follow on Twitter. The handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how's your sanity?
I'm good, man. You know, like, right, there's still the easy part, because I guess there are other things coming up in February that's really going to make it taxing. But right now, I just, you know, roll in, do a few hours of radio, and roll out. So right now, I'm still staying. Check in after Valentine's Day.
Boy, you just made my stories I tell my bosses about how hard I work to do this. Flush that crap right down the tubes.
That's not what I was saying. The insane part is going to be when I have to do that and other stuff. Right now, I just have to do the one.
All right. Well, after 20 years, you just undid every story I ever told, so thanks a lot for that.
I'm also with someone else, though, so, you know, I got a little easier.
All right. So, by the way, I saw you guys had Rob Nyer on yesterday.
We did.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'd spoken with him many times over the years, long time ago. A terrific baseball guy. I'm kind of curious. I'd assume you talked about the Hall of Fame.
Yes, we did.
So what do you have to say?
He's got a new book he's pushing, so you might want to try and hit him up again.
Okay.
He was down with the selections, thought they all obviously should be in there. We talked a little bit about Tomei. Dwight James' feeling on Tomei was that he just never thought of him as a Hall of Fame guy. And my argument on that was that I think that was because he just didn't come across as either flashy or he didn't receive as much attention as the other guys. When you looked at his numbers, like, you know, 4-year stretch of 40 home runs or more with a 50 in there.
Yeah.
So he clearly was just consistently just mashing the ball, but he just didn't receive the attention of the same as the Bonzes and the Griffies and Frank Thomases, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact that he got the 600, that was a lot. Like, there's only 7 guys have done that, right?
Exactly. And yeah. Well, he's one of the few ones who we know did it clean.
Yeah, at least we think. I think he was no brainer, but they were both making the point that he just is one of those guys that just put together these numbers almost, you know, under the radar because he wasn't necessarily considered a star. Edgar Martinez, who I think was 70.6 or something like that,
yep.
He's close. They both believe he'll get in next year. I was kind of like, I look at his numbers and I still don't get it. Like, they're good, but 300 home runs, like, really? And then the 312 batting average obviously is really good, but. You know, Tony Gwynn's in, but Tony Gwynn did play some D. I don't know. I'm not against him being in it. I just don't see the fascination with it.
Yeah, that's what I said. For people, I was like, if I had a vote, it's a no. But if they put him in, I wouldn't be adamantly against it. I'm always interested to see. You mentioned how the vote goes for Bonds or Clemens. Two guys.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, two guys who, if they had career-ending injuries in 1998 instead of starting a Peds program, are
right.
In. So if you had a vote, I'm kind of curious. How would you deal with? Yeah, first of all, I believe eventually the Hall of Fame, the museum, has to deal with the entire era, with a wing or an explanation. But how would you deal with Bonds and Clemens if you were a voter?
You know, I've kicked that around in my head numerous ways. I think, first of all, I think you have to look at guys who clearly were Hall of Famers before what we consider the steroid era and say, okay, these guys get in. Like, there's no doubt anyone's mind that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are Hall of Famers. Like, there's no doubt, right? Steroids or no steroids, no one would debate that. So, yeah, maybe you punish them by making them wait, but you have to put them in. You have to put them in. And also, how many times were they suspended for steroids?
Well, that's another thing. And plus,
if
I think a door was open with guys like Ivan Rodriguez last year and Mike Piazza. I mean, Rodriguez, at him. We joked about when he went through the change after the Mitchell report, we started calling him Slim Rodriguez.
He lost all sorts of weight. And he was playing with Palmeiro in Texas, right?
Yep.
See, Palmeiro to me is the funniest one because he never looked like he was doing steroids.
Right.
right, or whatever he was using. But the thing with him wasn't adding the bulk. It was just adding a little bit more pop and having that sustained level of play and not having those dips.
Right.
Which was when I started learning more about how it worked. Because my thing, okay, I play football at PSU, and even when I was at Pacific, which was Division III, there were guys juicing, which used to trip me out because I'd be like, what you juicing for? You're not going to the NFL. You never know. When I get bigger, I'm like, you're not going to the NFL. I don't care how big you get. And you would see them get bigger. Like, they come back from the summer just yoked, right? Just like ripped. And so then when you started seeing in baseball with Canseco and McGuire, it was like, okay, they're hitting the ball further. But that wasn't real. And so in football, that was the thing, was getting big for that reason. But in baseball, I used to think, well, you know, other than getting bigger, what else would you use it for? Like, why would a pitcher ever use it? And then you start learning more about, well, it's not just about the bulk and the strength. It's about sustaining that high level play and not having the dips because of a long season.
Sure.
And so that's what Palmeiro benefited from, and I think that's what Sosa benefited from, and all of those guys did. And so for me, if Pudge got all beefy like that when he was playing with Palmeiro and then some other guys on Texas that Leslie were doing it, it's hard to believe he didn't do it. So you're right. And Piazza's a guy people have wondered about. So I think it's starting to change. And Nyer made the argument that, you know, as the older voters move out of the voting pool, maybe some of the younger voters will look past it and look at it differently, and that'll help get those guys more votes. But I think they have 4 more years to try and get in.
Yeah, because the logic is you want to get in while there are younger voters, because then if it goes to the veteran committees, it's the veteran players who have been pretty vocal about saying no to these guys.
Right, and I just, yeah. I mean, I kind of get it, but I feel like the guys who are obviously great, like, it's just what was going, it's what people were doing. Like, it's what people were doing, and baseball let it go. If baseball let it go, how can you punish the guys for doing it if it became the thing?
No, I understand. See, with me, I say simply that, you know, Bonds was the best player I ever saw. I found that he juiced. I forever was like, don't put him in. He's going to get in. And the only reason I don't want him to get in is just simply for spite.
Yeah, but okay, so what do you do about the NFL? Like, how many guys are in the Hall of Fame in the NFL who did roids?
Well, from what we learned,
and if Bill Nyer made that same argument. He's like, what do we do about the amphetamine era?
Well, the thing is, if you've read books about the Steelers of the 70s, you're like, oh my God, everybody on the offensive and defensive line were using the anabolic steroids that, you know, in essence went on to kill like John Matusak and Al Zato and maybe even Mike Webster. So, yeah, you get to a point where you're splitting hairs, I guess.
Exactly. So I just think you look at, like, I've kind of came up with this 20% rule. You deduct everyone's stats, the home run numbers especially, and maybe some of the RBIs by 20%. And if you still have Hall of Fame numbers, you put them in. Because you got to figure, the juice is not going to make you much better than 20% better than what you would have been. Because let's put it, it's not like 15 people did steroids and 15 people became Monstars. No, a ton of people were doing it, but the best of the best became superhuman. Those guys still would have been great, put them in. But just let it be known, they're in, but they were believed to have done steroids during the steroid era.
No, that's why I would like to see the guys. You know, it's called the Cooperstown Museum and Hall of Fame. Those guys, it's got to be addressed. The asterisks are ridiculous because, like you said, if A-Rod hit 660 homers, we know he juiced. It wasn't like he was going to hit 11 without it.
Yeah, exactly. He would have just hit maybe 525.
Right. Talking with Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. Now, so you cracked me up today, that story in the sporting news. So the NBA added this interesting wrinkle to the All-Star game, having the top vote getters, LeBron and Steph, kind of choose up sides, old school playground style. And then at the last minute, the union stepped in and said, let's keep this a secret. They did a conference call, and I was like, man, that would have been so much fun, don't you think?
That would have been more watts than the damn game. Are you kidding me? Two-star players drafting their teams like pickup style basketball would have been fascinating. And the idea that the players union stepped in because they didn't want whoever might be, you know, the late picks to be offended or sad or embarrassed, to me is humiliating. I can't believe that these guys who are making all this money, who are NBA players, who are still all-stars. Even if you're the last pick, you're an all-star. you're in the top 24 in the league. You're not voted. You're not picked last in the entire league, right?
Yes.
You picked last among the All Stars. It's just so dumb to me that that would block them from making this live. It's so embarrassing.
Well, I came up with a deal. If you want to humiliate me and pick me as the last All Star and pay me $20 million, you can televise it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And, but they, if they were creative, they would make the last pick something special. Like you would have an award for it, an honor for it, or it's just, or that person gets a bonus to their charity. I don't know. You just do something to make it almost like guys are like, yeah, I got the last pick, woo, or whatever. But you're still an All-Star for crying out loud. It's just that to me, what did I tweet? Something like, the headline was wrong. It should be read something like badass NBA players who really are children or something like that. I can't remember. But I'm so upset that happened. That's just ridiculous.
No, it is absolutely, Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, that guy every year is celebrated and he takes his stride. You know why? Because he's happy he got drafted.
Right.
He's like, that's not good. I got drafted. Thank God. But here we have NBA All-Stars who we don't want them to be last amongst 24.
Wow. Sensitive.
So bad.
So now that we got you to join the Legion of Golfers, did you have any interest in seeing how Tiger did today?
You know, I did. I have no idea what he did, though. What did he do?
He actually shot even. He almost made an ace on 16 to get him to even for a tap-in. I mean, he's 83rd and 7 shots back. But I got to tell you, I was really skeptical. Physically, he looked like Tiger Woods.
Oh, good. That's you know what? I would like for him to – he needs 4 more to tie Jack, right?
Yep.
4 majors. It's hard for me to believe he's going to get those 4, especially with all these hot young golfers running around. But I would like to see him at least get 1 more.
Yeah, I've always been of the opinion that if he's healthy – because of Augusta National, you even saw Jack into his 50s and Fred Couples into his 50s. Sometimes those guys at that course, they need that 1 4-day run where they could put it together and contend. But like I said, it was an interesting afternoon to watch him play.
As long as he didn't crumple because of an injured back, then that was good.
That was it. That's what I was wondering. Continue with Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. So I'm all about entrepreneurs and trying to make money and tweak an idea, an old idea. So today, Vince McMahon announces a gimmick-free league, the new XFL. My first thought was, why? I was curious as to what you thought when you heard this idea.
Well, I first was kind of intrigued and maybe excited if they brought a team to Portland. I think I would love to see an outdoor football team in Portland and see how it did, as long as the expectations were realistic in that league and they weren't overpaying players and, you know, overselling their product and just sort of operate within the actual revenue they could generate. But then I started hearing, like, he's got all these weird rules, like you can't have any type of criminal record. Like if you have a DUI in your past, you can't play. Any displays of protests won't be tolerated.
Right.
So it almost sounds like there's some political undertones with this thing that kind of like made me go, that's not going to work.
No.
But you know, I do think there's room for the right outdoor football league that's in the off season where guys who are on the fringe of the NFL can play, and maybe you have those success stories where they go on to the NFL. I just don't think the NFL really needs a developmental league because they have a 53-man roster where it's 2-45, so you have 8 guys extra right there, and then you have 8 on your practice squad.
Right.
You have your own developmental squad. It's right there in your practice squad. But if you're going to have something like that, I think it could work as long as you're realistic about what you're paying guys. And we'll see if Vince McMahon can figure that out. But if it's just, you know, if it's just football for the sake of football to try and be anti-NFL and try and make some kind of statement in that regard, it's not going to work. No one's going to care.
And especially, it's January of 2018. It's not even going to start for another 2 years. So this all is going to be long forgotten. So
exactly. But the idea, like, we're not going to have anyone who's ever had a criminal, you know, record, or we're not going to have anyone who protests anything. So who are we catering to? All the people who are whining about Kaepernick all season, you know, that's not going to support a league. That group of fans is not going to support a league. And then when those fans who go and actually watch those games go, yeah, we like this football better because no one's protesting and no one has a personality and they're just robots, then they're going to watch the gameplay and go, oh my God, this is nothing compared to the NFL.
To Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, exactly. They'll gradually steer back to the NFL and go, you know what, maybe a protest here and there is not that bad.
Yeah, a minute and a half protest by 16 of the 1,700 players they could tolerate exactly. To watch the best football player in the world.
Exactly. my dentist the other day actually said to me, yeah, I didn't watch much NFL this year, you know, those protests and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, does he not see that I'm black? Does he not see that? He's been my dentist for 20 years. He actually said that to me. I just kind of looked at him and thought, are you kidding me? You did not just say that to me. Anyway.
So are you saying your dentist needs an optometrist?
I guess. Like, so what part of you gambled that I would not think that, you know, taking a knee, protesting, you know, police brutality might not be a horrible thing? did you really roll the dice on that and assume that? It's just weird.
Wow, that's an interesting take. So final thought on Championship Sunday, whether it's the fact that Jags blew a chance to shock the world or that Hall of Fame quarterback battle between Nick Foles and Case Keenum turned into a blowout, what stuck out to you?
Oh, by far. Well, Jacksonville with a 20-10 lead in the ball 9 minutes ago, not being able to, at that point, not do hardly anything on either side of the ball and letting Tom Brady do what Tom Brady does, which is just so irritating at this point. That stood out. And then even more so than that, because that wasn't surprising. I mean, who's Jacksonville? What have they ever done, right?
Right.
As soon as it got close, as soon as it was 24-20, I saw Blake Bortles walk out there with the entire field in front of him. I'm like, God, this is over. There's no way they're going to pull this off. But the big thing was Nick Foles. Oh, my God. He was not very good, obviously, against Atlanta. And in the last two regular season games, he was not good at all. And then all of a sudden, he puts together, you know, one of the great playoff performances. He was unbelievable. That touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey when he was bouncing around the pocket and guys were right in front of him fighting to get to him, and his old lineman just hold him off just enough so we can stand there and slide to the left and sling that ball deep. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And then he had another pass down the sideline. He kind of sidearm flicked it right over the defender down the sideline to a guy. I mean, he was unreal. If he plays like that in the Super Bowl, they're going to win. The question is, can he perform like that against Bill Belichick, who's going to have 2 weeks to prepare for him? That will be the deciding factor in this game.
All right. Hey, fun stuff as always. Keep up with try to keep up with all Fentress is up to. Might be easier just start with Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. AF, always a pleasure, man. Enjoy your weekend. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, buddy. Talk later.
All right. Take it easy.